Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with your host tonight, Alan, and myself, Elaine. Tonight on Orange Ribbon, we'll be speaking to DJ Sveta from Sydney. Sveta has held a number of national and international DJ profile for over a decade and is well known around the country for explosive sets at Mardi Gras and Sleaze, to name just a few. Russian-born Sveta is going to share with us a journey from Russia to Australia and from radio DJ to superstar DJ. So stay tuned as we meander through her life. And all music tonight will be from her very own house disco and electro sets.
Welcome to Orange Ribbon. You're with Aline and Alan tonight. Hello, Aline. How are you?
I'm good. I'm great. I've had a fantastic weekend. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, what were you doing? Anything interesting? Oh, last weekend. No, there was no carnival.
No, you know what? I was supposed to go to Girlfest, and I've got to introduce Girlfest because our guest tonight is the one of the DJs at Girlfest last weekend, which I missed terribly, and our guest is DJ Sveta, who a lot of people know around Australia. Hi, Sveta. How are you going?
I'm very good. How are you guys?
We're good. Look, tell us what we missed last weekend, because I was devastated. I couldn't go because I couldn't find a dog sitter.
Couldn't find what?
A dog sitter. Could you believe it? Yes, a dog sitter.
I understand. I'm a new mother of two, so I'm bound by their schedules. We actually got a dog sitter. Well, Girlfest was pretty amazing. I've actually never been part of a Girlfest before, so it was a new experience for me, and it's a very brave and amazing thing to sort of put on a festival, you know, of golfing, swimming, all kinds of fun stuff just for women.
Yes, speed dating, jelly wrestling. I wanted to enter the jelly wrestling, but did you?
I heard the jelly wrestling was very popular.
I wonder why.
And the go-go girls, I think, were also the jelly wrestlers. So I saw a lot of people sort of trying to beat, you know, hightail for those girls.
Yeah, anyway, before we move into the music side of things, tell us a little bit about yourself and where you come from.
Okay, well, I was born in Odessa, which is in a country called the Ukraine, but I left Odessa when I lived there. It was actually part of the USSR.
Mm-hmm.
So I come from the USSR, and in the USSR we all spoke Russian, so that's...
That's your mother tongue.
Yeah, that's my mother tongue. That was my first language.
What do you recall? I understand you left there when you're about eight or something, but you must have some memories of those childhood years while you were there. What do you remember of those days?
The most clear memory I have. I left when I was about six and a half. I arrived in Australia and I was eight. The clearest memories I have is the famous steps in Odessa. There's if you've ever seen the film Battleship Potemkin, there's a really famous port and a set of stairs. So my dad used to take me for like a walk around there almost every weekend, and I remember distinctly he used to buy me this Russian ice cream that I really, really loved.
What's Russian ice cream?
Oh, it was just like, it kind of looked like, from memory, it was a bit like an ice cream sandwich that you get in Australia, but without the actual biscuits. I don't know, I was so young, but I just remember having like a really good time, sort of like, you know, going for lots of walks. My parents used to also take me to a lot of cultural events. They regularly took me to the theatre, to the ballet, to like anything, any children's productions. They were really fantastic, my brother and I, and you know, really instilled like a sense of you know, the importance of the art.
Of the arts, yeah. And what did your parents do?
My mum was an accountant, and my dad was an engineer.
Right. Okay.
In the USSR, and then when we migrated, they did all kinds of odd jobs. And I think when we came here, they became cleaners, like most parents.
Migrant parents, yes. Migrant at the time. Parents. What made them come to Australia?
My brother is 10 years older, and he was turning, he was like 16 and a half, turning 17, almost 18, and the war against Afghanistan was happening with Russia.
Yes, mm-hmm.
And he was about to get,
drafted,
enlisted,
yeah,
into the army. So, as you probably know, historically, a lot of the Russian boys were sort of slaughtered in that war. So they kind of made a really rash decision to get out. And the only reason we could leave, because at the time the doors were closed,
yes.
you know, it was the Iron Curtain,
mm-hmm.
Is because we have a Jewish background. And while we're not religious, like my parents actually call themselves atheists, that was the only way we could get out, because they, like, the only people that let out, they ever hated more than anyone were Jews, so they let us out. And we kind of said that we were going to our homeland in Israel, which we kind of never really
went to.
Any intention of going there.
So you're giving us a little bit of a history lesson here, because what you're suggesting is it was easier for Jews to get out of Russia, even albeit for a false reason. But if you were going back to Israel, they did let you get out.
Yeah, well, especially the Ukraine. It's one of the most anti-Semitic places on earth.
Mm-hmm.
They were happy to let us go.
So you would have maybe studied that a little bit later on, but what was the process for your parents? Or was it just a matter of saying, I'm Jewish and I want to get out, and that was as easy as that?
I mean, look, I was very young, so
yeah.
I can only tell you sort of what I know of it, and it may or may not, you know, may have, you know, been a little bit coloured over time.
Sure.
But from what I remember, at the time there were a lot of Jewish organisations, there was a Jewish organisation helping Jews go to Israel.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we had to basically sell everything, and they financially helped us get to Italy. So we had mm-hmm. a bit of a Sound of Music time. Like, it really was like we had to get on a train, go
yes.
to Vienna. The border guards took what little we took with us. Like,
yes.
it was a really rash decision that my mm-hmm. parents made, but they were really, like, sort of worried about the future.
Yes.
Because also my mum wanted to become, like, a university educated, like, you know, linguistic teacher, but she wasn't allowed because in the USSR at the time, if you had a Jewish background, they stamped Jew on your passport.
Really?
You weren't, like, even, like, a member of your own society. They kind of labelled you, and there was a lot you couldn't do. So they wanted to sort of go away, get away as far away on earth as mm-hmm. they could think of, where they would feel safer. So once we got to Italy, we were supposed to go to Israel, but what a lot of non-religious Jews did was they then applied to go somewhere else. So
and obviously that part of the journey wasn't monitored by anybody, so that it didn't matter what you did afterwards.
Well, from what I understand,
yeah.
I mean, I can't clearly remember, but when we got to Italy, we were accepted instantly into the United States, into New York, and also
right.
Canada. But my parents didn't want to go there because they were about the Cold War, still the Cold War in 1980.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they were scared that, being from, you know, Russian background.
Yes, that they wouldn't be too welcome there.
Yes.
Now, if I remember correctly, the Russian invaded Afghanistan in 1979, is that right?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so you would have left in 1980.
No, we left in late 78.
Just before then.
Well, mid 78, and then, and then we tried to get into Australia, but Australia is very hard to get into.
Yeah, especially at that time.
I'm sure a lot of people don't realise that, because so much racism here. They think that immigrants get let in easily, but they really don't.
No, that's not true, yes.
And because my mother had has a bad heart, because she had rheumatic fever as a child, we actually had to wait for a year and a half to get let in.
Right, so where did you stay all that time?
We stayed in a place called Ostia Dolida, which is just outside of Rome, and there was a little bit of a community there.
A Russian community?
Yeah, with similar backgrounds, and we sort of lived in, you know, an apartment, and we were very, it was very nice. We had Italian neighbours, and they're very kind to us, and they, you know, would bring us pizza or whatever, like, help us out with food sometimes, like. So we finally got in to Australia in January 1980, and it was just before I turned 8, and we've been here ever since.
You're listening to Orange Ribbon with Alan and Aline here, and our guest Sveta.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with Alan, myself, Aline, and our guest tonight, DJ Sveta. Sveta.
Thank you for having me.
We were talking about your trip back from, trip from Russia to Australia via Italy. So we were in Italy and you were waiting to get into Australia. Did you get straight from Italy to Australia?
Yeah, we went straight from Italy on a Qantas flight.
On a Qantas flight.
To Australia, I remember that very distinctly.
Did that make you feel like you're already in Australia?
Well, at that time I didn't know much about the Qantas. I just knew that that was the airline that you flew with. But I did remember the preconceptions I had of what it was going to be like when we landed.
And what were they?
I remember thinking that we were going to go to a very desert-like place. I think that, you know, in school that's what we kind of learnt in Italy. And I thought there'd be a lot more Indigenous people than there actually were. And I remember,
going back one step, you went to school in Italy for a year, did you?
I went to school for a year and a half in Italy, and I learnt Italian at school, and I learned, and because we kind of migrated through that Jewish welfare organization, it was a Hebrew school, and that was the very first time I ever had any contact with that. Oh, that'd be my puppy. Yes, I'm new to the dog thing, I'm sorry, guys.
That's all right, I've got a 5-month-old puppy at home as well, so...
Yeah, that was the very first time I came across any kind of Jewish, you know, culture in my life. So that was interesting. So for a little while I spoke Italian, Russian and English. And then, and...
A little bit of Hebrew.
Italian, Hebrew and Russian. And then once I landed in Australia, I sort of focused on English and forgot.
Did you have any English before you landed in Australia?
I had none. I had absolutely none. Quite an adventure, all these languages and experiences.
So do you you're still fluent in Russian?
Yes, I am.
And
yes.
What do you remember of Hebrew and Italian?
Absolutely nothing of Hebrew. Because, my mother's got a pretty hardcore attitude to all of that. She steers away from all religion, not just the Hebrew thing or the Jewish culture. She feels, because we've lost all our family in the Holocaust, it's only my mother, my brother, and my father. She feels like if there can't be a God, because a God wouldn't do that. So that's her attitude. So there's no religion that's ever entered our household at all. And Italian, I remember all the swear words,
which is very handy. So are you parents in Australia?
Yeah, my parents are in Australia. They're all the other Russian immigrants. In Bondi.
All right.
From Bondi, and where I escaped from that a little while ago. another escape.
And what's the Russian heritage in your present life? How prominent is it?
It's actually becoming a little bit more prominent. As every child does, they try to steer away from their background as much as they can, you know, because you go through that period of not fitting in so much and sort of not understanding why your family's so different from everyone else. But it's funny, it's kind of found me lately. I got asked about a year ago to do a Russian event at the Sydney Opera House to DJ.
Yes, I heard about that.
Which is really fun. It had the Zulia and the Melbourne band, Zulia and the Children of the Underground, and Volgograd, both Melbourne bands, actually. And I got asked to DJ, and I guess I'm really the only person that's a DJ
from a Russian background,
but I'd never really DJed Russian music. So when I knew I had that gig, which was months and months before it happened, I started researching a lot of Russian music and started to kind of sift through that and realise what stuff I like more than other stuff. And I got discovered by another Melbourne, this Melbourne connection again, the Uberlingua crew in Melbourne.
You've got to move to Melbourne, Sveta. You have to.
And they've included me in about 3 or 4 of their events in Sydney, especially the Gypsy Balkan parties and stuff. So
Do you remember any? Sorry, do you remember any music from your childhood? Russian music?
I do remember music, but the funny thing is, because my brother is 10 years older and sort of always intrigued by the Western culture, he used to go to the black market all the time and always buy illegal music from the West. So I actually grew up, all this music we weren't supposed to have in the West, I mean in the USSR. So
yeah, and what was that, for example?
Oh, things like the Rolling Stones, like, mm-hmm. because like in the USSR, there was only one record label called Melodia, so the only stuff you could get was stuff released on that label. So,
right.
I actually grew up with a lot of Western music, a lot of rock and roll, actually, like 50s, 60s rock and roll, and I also remember artists. There's a famous Russian female artist that's still famous called Alla Pugachova, and I also loved my there was a lot of amazing Russian fairy tales that they put to song.
All right.
Records. They're one of the only things that I brought back from the USSR were these, like, actually they were like coloured vinyl with all my favourite Russian fairy tales. And one that's not a Russian fairy tale, but I thought was a Russian fairy tale, but someone told me, I actually had a fight when I first came to Australia with an Australian kid that said Winnie Pooh or Winnie Pooh was not Russian.
Yes, Winnie the Pooh.
I was like, no, Winnie Pooh is Russian.
I know. Oh, you thought it was Russian.
But yeah, so that's my memories of Russian music as a child.
You're listening to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9.
Gay and lesbian radio for everyone. Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with Alan tonight, myself, Elaine, and Sveta's on the phone in Sydney.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Again, we were talking about you digging out Russian music for last year's show at the Opera House. What was it exactly you were doing?
I was asked to sort of, do my own take on sort of the best of what I saw as Russian music out there, and it's quite interesting because there's no one actually from the background sort of working in contemporary culture. I actually had to talk to a lot of Anglo people who are like Ruskophiles to help my research.
Is that what you're called, Ruskophiles?
Yeah, they call them, there's lots of people intrigued by Russian culture.
Sure.
There's heaps, actually. So I interviewed people like Andrew Tanner, who's part of not only Zulia and the Children of the Underground, but also Volgograd, mm-hmm. who lived at times in the USSR. I also talked to a work colleague at the time called Greg, who also lived and did, like, you know, studied in the USSR.
Yeah.
I spoke to my friend Azaria, who's a circus performer.
Yes, she was down in Melbourne last year for, what show was that? Is that a burlesque show?
Yeah.
Burlesque Hour. So that's right.
She's travelled and studied circus, the Moscow Circus. So I've got, mm-hmm. like, all these great Ruskophile friends who got me onto some leads, and then I started listening to it. And, you know, there was some god-awful pop music, which I couldn't really handle. But there was also some, you know, like, it was really interesting because when I left the USSR, obviously it was a very different time. And I realised that, you know, there's Russian house music. And there's Russian hip-hop.
Yes, Russian hip-hop. I know, I'm French originally, and discovering French hip-hop is quite amazing, actually. French, it just doesn't sound right, but you get used to it.
It's like a cover of Mr. Bombastic, you know, like a song in Russian. And
can you do a rendition here on the phone?
If I could sing, I would. So I kind of just grabbed bits and pieces, and even stuff that wasn't Russian but had Russian samples in it. Like, there's a lot of sort of trippy lounge music that I found that had, like, little bits of Russian samples or... Mm-hmm. Some in Anglo voice going, oh, would you like to play a round of Russian roulette? And the night was called Russian roulette. So I kind of did like a soundscape full of all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was really educational for me because I pride myself on knowing all all kinds of genres of, you know, dance, dance music, and and a lot of other music out there. But, you know, kind of a shame. I didn't know much about my own culture, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Now, going back a step and settling in Australia, how hard did you find it? And was coming out a big thing for you, or not really?
Well, I guess the first part of the question, was it hard to be in, to, what was it like to adjust in Australia? It was very hard because I came to Australia during the Cold War. So I guess, you know, the only way I can liken it to, I guess, is if you came to Australia now from an Arabic country.
Yes, yeah.
You know, like that kind of racism existed back then for people from those backgrounds, because at the time there was a lot of propaganda on television, on the news. Everyone thought they were going to detonate a nuclear bomb, you know, any moment.
Yes.
And, you know, James Bond films, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I was pretty much tortured, to be honest with you, tortured at school.
Yeah. And obviously your English would have been pretty minimal to start with, so...
Pardon?
Your English would have been pretty minimal to start with, so it would have been kind of isolating.
Yeah, it was, and I had an accent which, you know, slowly faded away. But it was a pretty tortured existence, and it was pretty lonely. But I guess those kinds of things build up your character.
Absolutely.
How long did it take you to feel that you're reasonably competent with English?
Actually, really quick. Within 6 months, and this is maybe a little bit embarrassing to the educational system, within 6 months, my level of competency was higher than the Aussie kids.
School.
So I actually got put up a grade.
No surprise.
Yeah, I got put up a grade, and then I got into Sydney Girls High after, you know, I finished primary school and went into a selective school. So, but I did English as second language classes right up until high school. So,
right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Except it was my fourth.
Yeah. So going back to the second part of my question, which was coming out in Australia in with your heritage, was that any issue, or was it just...
Well, I guess I'm not really typical. My story isn't really typical of my culture or any other culture. I actually didn't have any issues about... I didn't know I was going to end up dating women in, you know, primary school or even in high school. I actually used to fall in love with pop stars and male pop stars. I mean, I should have, I guess now I look back at the ones I fell in love with, like Boy Billy, and probably maybe I could have questioned it. I was falling for such effeminate men. But at the same time, it was the 80s, and, you know, it was pretty normal for guys to look... and women to look androgynous.
Yeah.
You know, Grace Jones.
Absolutely, yeah. Eurythmics, Annie Lennox and all that, yeah.
But what about the family? What was the reaction from the family?
Well, I actually didn't even sort of fall for the first woman that I fell on until I was almost 21. So, you know, because I was already, you know, well into my uni degree, and I was fascinated by gender and stuff, started to... 21 after I just had the first affair with a woman, that I was bisexual, and, you know, it was probably the worst thing I could do, because it really confused them. I mean, if it wasn't tortured enough to tell someone from that background about that level of sexuality, when absolutely no one in that community, you know, had a queer child at all, I confused them more, thinking that I might have a chance of being, you know, like normal or straight, which is the way they look at it. I almost would have been better off telling them I was gay and having to deal with it than telling them I was bisexual.
You're listening to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9.
Bringing a whole new meaning to community. Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9. You're with Alan, myself, Aline, and Sveta's on the phone from Sydney.
Howdy.
Hey, Sveta, we were talking about you researching Russian music for last year's event. Now, you did Midsummer this year, and you did in Melbourne. How did you find that? Was it your first Midsummer?
I did a Midsummer, the major party that they used to have, like my first gig in Melbourne was in 1998, so 10 years ago. But
right.
I hardly ever get work in Melbourne. I play all over Australia, but...
Why is that?
I think because in some people's minds that weird Sydney-Melbourne divide happens, and we hardly ever get taken to Melbourne, which is a shame because, you know, I love Melbourne.
Yes.
And I'd be happy to play there very regularly, so...
How did you get... Because you worked as a radio DJ for a while. How did you get into that? Is it something that you wanted to do or it just happened?
Well, I've always been incredibly passionate about music, mm-hmm. and I, when I went to university, when I went on my first day to university, I went around the orientation, you know, area, and on our campus there was a flyer for a radio station to SCR, which at the time was the leading community radio station in Australia.
Yeah.
And in New South Wales, and I joined, and within a year I sort of went from the collective show that I did at uni, and I got offered my own breakfast show.
Excellent.
And ended up doing that from the time I joined, you know, uni, and then I did it for 12 years.
12 years, and was it a music show mainly, or?
It was a breakfast show, so I did, you know, my degree was in communication,
yeah.
so I did, like, interviews, I played music. And
right.
Weather, traffic, all that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, all that kind of thing, and we actually came, like, when I was doing it, it was a bit of a heyday. A lot of the people who were on the other days went on to do kind of high-profile media stuff, but I used to do the Friday morning breakfast show.
Yeah.
The Wednesday breakfast show was hosted by Fenella Turnerbone, who... on Triple J and on TV these days, and the Thursday one was Robbie Buck on Triple J, and so like we were there at during a heyday.
Mm-hmm. And how did you move from being a radio DJ to actually performing in front of a crowd? What was the incentive there?
To become a filmmaker, because I never really considered sort of doing what I was passionate about as like on that level, like what I enjoyed listening to as a career. So. But people used to constantly phone for years. For the first 6 years, they used to always call and ask where they could come and hear me spin. And I just said, look, it's a different skill, radio DJing, club DJing. And I never sort of, you know, I never really accepted any work that was offered to me. And then one day I'd finished a film project, like a film I'd worked on, and I had a bit of spare time, and someone asked me to step in to do a Mardi Gras recovery in Sydney in 1996, and I finally relented and said yes, but I warned them that I couldn't actually beat mix. But because I'd had 6 years of radio experience at the time, I was a flawless crossfader. You know, I realised that I couldn't mix. Like, and I discovered that day, classic, by the Beresford Hotel, which is the hottest bar at the time, and they gave me a night trial. They had, you know, it was a huge success. And then within a few months, they offered me that Friday night shift. And then within a few months, myself and Luke Leal started the very first Monday morning recovery.
Yeah.
And then within a few months after that, I got offered the Melrose Place Wednesday night, which is famous around the country and the world, because every time like a Melrose Place celebrity would
they would come to Beresford
and stuff. So by the end of that year, so that was like March, by the end of that year I actually stopped and realised I was a DJ. I had no idea.
Someone told you were a DJ and it was time to take it seriously.
and I actually seriously haven't been out of work since, so.
And you've been pretty much everywhere. You were in Tokyo, New York, New Zealand, London. You've been to Paris?
No, but I'm going to go to Paris this year.
Yes? Where are you going?
I go for an annual tour to New York because that's my biggest market outside of Australia. Mm-hmm. I broke in New York in 96, so, I mean, sorry, in 2006, so this will be my fifth trip to New York since then.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to do a little mini tour of Europe, which hasn't been finalised yet because the Scissor Sisters tour DJ, Sammy Joe, his manager's offered to sort of do a little tour for me. So I'm just in the process of just finished the demos and
That's you're also known for your eclectic taste in music.
Yeah.
Generally, how do you is there any particular genre that you at the moment that you particularly
at the moment look, I still just look for the best in every style, but at the moment I'm really enjoying new disco, which is because I think for a long time, you know, I loved electro, and I'm not just saying this, I was one of the first people in Sydney to start playing it when it became a new, like, came back into fashion. I started playing it in 2002, but it got so sort of repetitive that I really welcome sort of having, you know, a bass and sort of like a fun vibe. And
yeah, you know, how do you juggle being able to play to sort of very underground crowd and then very kind of mainstream, I get a bit like Mardi Gras and sleazeball? How do you compromise without compromising your integrity?
Well, for me, it's I don't struggle at all, because my struggle was like around the year 2000 when for some reason DJs were asked to play only one style of music.
Yeah, yeah.
And I felt the most compromised thing, because I didn't understand how you could be a music lover.
That's true, yeah.
Only like one style of music, it baffled me. So I actually really was relieved about 2003. You probably all heard of the Bang Gang,
yes,
in Melbourne. They started their night in Sydney in 2003, and they pretty much in the third weekly event they had, they asked me to guest DJ, and they really brought in that real, you know, soul kind of sound where you could play anything and everything.
Yeah.
And I ended up being their most regular guest for 3 years. So I played with them for 3 years, and I was just really relieved. It meant I could play everything.
Anything that you wanted, yeah.
You were mentioning a little bit earlier in the program that your realization of Russian house and so on. how does, for example, Russian dance music vary from what we have in the West, or is it really merging?
I think it's really merging. I would say that I'm still not an expert to answer that question, because I can't focus all my time in researching that. But I think it's all merging. I think the world is actually, I think it's almost a bit sad. It's becoming very
uniform. Yeah. Mm.
It's very homogenous, and you know, I watch Russian news every once in a while, and the language. You know, like, and I talk to my other friends from other cultures, and they say the same thing is happening, where the languages are being lost. People are just doing it, like saying words, throwing a lot of words in there, even on the news, that are like the English name for something. Was it like a Russian ending?
Yeah, that's right. There's a lot of that in Europe, as in European languages are absorbing English at an incredible rate, which is a bit of a shame also. Because the music becomes pretty much, you know.
You know, like you'll get the Russian version of the Pussycat Dolls, and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And the culture's very, you know, the youth.
Do you have any connection with that? You know, a few weeks ago we had Adam Samantha Stretch on the show here.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. What's your connection with electropunk?
Well, sorry, you cut out there.
Sorry, what's your connection with electropunk? You were at Circus for Midsummer.
Yeah. I do a lot of sort of quirky little underground queer nights, mm-hmm, in Sydney. So that's exactly the kind of night I do very regularly in Sydney. So
and we love that in Melbourne, and you're going to have to come down and do some more. And we've come to the end of the show, unfortunately, Sveta.
Well, I can tell you, if you wanted to just hear very quickly, I just did a gig this weekend, and quite a few of the young queer kids that came to Circus came to Sydney to hear me after hearing me at Circus, and it,
excellent,
it's talking about sort of bringing me back once every couple of months to Melbourne.
Right.
So I'll be back.
We're looking forward to it. Definitely. Thanks very much for being on the show, Sveta.
Thanks very much, Sveta. Thanks for taking
the time.
Okay.
My pleasure.
Bye.
That's our On Driven for another week. Our special thanks to Sveta. Coming up next on Joy is the team from Global Sounds. Thanks for joining us on our On Driven tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 7 p.m. next Wednesday, with more insight into our GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world. Thanks to Nick on reception and his help tonight. So from now, from Alan and myself, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.